to Guardian Tech Weekly, the super amazing review of 2009 Christmas edition. It's that time of year when we look back with a glass of sherry and a slice of Christmas cake. Yum. I'm joined by the Donna, Dancer and Blitzen of technology, Charles Arthur, Robert Andrews and Bobby Johnson. Welcome all. Charles, perhaps you could start with your one-word review of 2009.
Cloudy, because, you know, it's been all about the cloud.
That's a good one. Robert, what would you go for?
Jedward.
No, of course.
Very technological.
Bobby, what would be your word of choice?
I've been ranging between blur and meh. I don't know which one to pick.
I'm excited about what you've come up with for this show then. you join us today as we look back at the moment the government tried to get us all online, then the moment they tried to kick some of us offline again, the start of a happy new era as Vista was finally usurped, and the year the iPhone finally lost its complete and utter ubiquity. So, without further ado, we better see what we're kicking things off with. And the answer is content. It's been a very big year for getting stuff to put on your existing stuff.
If you want to share contact info with a bump, there's an app for that. Because there's an app for just about anything.
Introducing Spotify.
A world of music.
Instant, simple, and free.
Google is taking the step of adding real-time entries into its search results pages, incorporating constantly changing updates from sites like Facebook and Twitter.
Right now, it's time for the one and only 100% engineered to cut through the decision engine. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time to be and decide.
It's stuff like that that warms the very cockles of my geeky heart. Now, Robert, let's start with one of the big success stories, Spotify. Are you a fan?
Massive fan. I was listening to Spotify on my mobile phone on the way over. You say big success. It's proved itself to be very popular. It hasn't necessarily been successful at making lots of money yet. I know Charles and I have tried to run the numbers on Spotify a couple of times this year, and frankly, music licensing is so complex and opaque that I've just thrown my hands in the air and decided that we really don't know how much money Spotify is making yet.
The simple problem is that it doesn't scale. You know, for a web app, it doesn't scale because for say a Google, if it buys one computer to be a server, then that can serve either one query or, you know, 1,000 queries or perhaps 1,000,000 queries. Whereas for Spotify, if it serves one song, okay, it has to pay a single payment for that song. But if it does 1,000,000 songs, it has to do 1,000,000 of those payments, which means that it can't scale. It can't, you know, build on the fact that it's got economies of scale in its hardware. It doesn't get economies of scale in the content.
I hope that they can scale, though. I know that they have quite a strong commitment to making a successful standalone European internet company without having to sell to a big American company. So I hope they can do that.
Okay, what about more generally, apps in general? Bobby, has 2009 been the year of the apps, or was that 2008?
I think what was started in 2008 has certainly rolled on in 2009. I mean, everywhere you look, you can't. We've just seen the Guardian's launched its iPhone app. Everyone's getting in on the game. What interests me though is the general trend. You know, we've seen this blossoming of ideas and activity. I'm wondering about at what point people start to worry about the. Like they worry with web content, the trend towards free. I mean, you can get people to pay for stuff, for applications on their mobile phone, but there's also a lot of free competition. And if you're, you know, from the point of a content provider, it's great to get people to pay for stuff that they would normally get for free on the web. If you're a software maker, however, the bar's really gone down rather than up. So there's this kind of interesting fight going on from either end of the spectrum.
What about social media content? I mean, we've got the likes of MySpace, Bebo, Facebook, Twitter. Who's done really well this year and who has seen their products slightly decline, would you say, Charles?
Well, MySpace and Bebo have certainly fallen off. Myself and Jemima, in the middle of the year, did a piece where we, you know, looked at the numbers, and MySpace was just basically falling off a cliff. Same with Bebo. Everyone was going to Facebook and to Twitter and indeed to LinkedIn. Those ones were growing very much faster and basically taking the business away from MySpace, which had to cut a lot of people. AOL certainly isn't getting any sort of value for money from its Bebo purchase. And MySpace is now trying to reinvent itself as a sort of a music streaming site, but has closed down iMeme, which it bought, which was the same sort of idea. So it's not clear quite what MySpace is going to be in 2010 or indeed, you know, whether it's really got a business model.
And what about Robert Bing? How do you think they've worked 2009?
Well, it's certainly an improvement on Windows Live Search. It's a good name. It's a very colourful site. It seems to have more personality than Google. But I'm one of these people who is very invested in the whole Google universe right now, and it's very hard to convince me to come over to Bing. But it's an improvement.
OK, so we'll be watching that next year then to see what goes on. Well, from stuff to put on your stuff to the stuff you're actually putting it on, namely mobiles. It's been an awesome year for mobiles, I reckon. There's been a real choice of top quality handsets out there. And best of all, the world's smartphone seems to be dying a death.
Android 2.0 provides new APIs and technologies for developers.
Welcome to Kindle, Amazon's new wireless reading device that lets you read books, magazines, newspapers, and blogs anywhere, anytime.
Used Microsoft on Tuesday as it launched the latest version of its phone system, Windows Mobile. The company's ambitions in the handset market have taken a beating from competitors such as the iPhone, BlackBerry, and Google's Android recently.
It's so simple to use that once you've tried Kindle, you'll find it's as easy as reading your favorite book.
Exciting stuff, and barely a mention of the iPhone. Charles, how do you think the mobile space has played out? What about handsets? How's it looking?
Android from the Google Android mobile platform has been doing a really interesting job of cutting into the low end, and it's made a lot of the companies that used to be Windows mobile licensees turn around and go towards Android because it's cheaper, and also because it seems to offer a much bigger app universe. Even though proponents of Windows Mobile say, well, actually, there's loads and loads of apps for Windows Mobile. The problem has been that they've never been in one place. There's never been any easy way of actually acquiring them. And Windows Mobile has just looked antiquated for some time. It's just got a lot of problems. And the relaunch towards the end of the year of Windows Mobile is Windows 6.5. Even though Microsoft then said, though, of course, this isn't quite the real thing. We're going to have a proper one more about a year's time from now. And everyone just looked at them aghast to say, you know, in a year's time, are you really still going to be around?
Bobby, what about the, the iPhone? Should we be expecting new hardware next year?
I think it's been a really interesting year for Apple. They've clearly staked out their claim to, you know, the high end of the market. They've got everyone chasing after them. I expect we'll see a new iPhone handset sometime in 2010, but I think the interesting thing is how they're really sucking the whole business in behind the iPhone now, in a way that they weren't before. You know, the iPod is starting to fade away a little bit, and there are other businesses as well. You know, nothing's growing like the iPhone, and I think they're still the ones to beat. I mean, go have a look at the Palm Pre and the Pixie as well that's coming up. This time last year we were waiting for these at CES, and they're great devices, but they just haven't really cut into Apple at all. Apple just continues to get bigger and bigger.
Moving slightly away from mobile phones now, Robert, the e-books, e-readers, has 2009 made them commonplace? And specifically, the question I have for you is, have you ever seen anyone using one not in a technology conference?
Once on the tube. You might have seen this guy on the tube.
Is he paid to ride around on the tube?
It's mythical.
No, it hasn't been the year of the e-reader yet. Bobby spoke about free and paid content. I think a lot of people in publishing have a belief or a faith that e-readers will take off or e-books will take off and they can start charging on that platform. But I'm not sure that single function devices will succeed. I think that these things need to be computers. They need to do more. Apple has done that in the mobile space. iPhone is essentially a mobile computer. I'm more looking forward to the emergence of tablet PCs next year. If the rumour is correct and Apple actually is coming out with these things, I think it could light the blue touch paper into that tablet market.
So one to watch there then. Now, we've also been prying into the brains of other friends of the podcast to find out their best bits of the year.
Hello, this is Victor Keegan. Looking back, I think I'd have to choose Virtual Worlds, though rather embarrassedly, because my friends still kind of move away from me when I raise the subject, because it's not on their radar. And the reason for this is it's happening in niche groups and also among teenagers, because membership of Virtual Worlds generally rose by 29% in the most recent quarter, and virtual spending in shops and on websites is absolutely booming despite the recession of the last couple of years. Five different companies have built virtual reproductions of London, all hoping to make money out of it. And there's this guy I interviewed a few weeks ago who's building the whole of the world as a virtual planet which people can go into and build their own homes and in their own roads. So I think that's really fascinating what's happening in virtual worlds. And because it's sort of a teenager thing working up, I think it's going to be really important for the future, but it just simply hasn't got onto our radar yet.
My name's Keith Stewart. I'm from the Guardian Games blog. My highlight of 2009 was the kind of offbeat, indie-type Xbox Live Arcade games that kind of harks back to the olden days of 2D platform gaming. Stuff like Trials HD and Shadow Complex, which were really kind of very basic 2D display games, but really, really loads and loads of fun. Also, the rise of iPhone games, lots of really, really good iPhone games this year. Secret of Monkey Island, Space Invaders, Infinity Gene, Wolfenstein RPG, loads of really, really lovely kind of stylish games to play on the go in what was, you know, otherwise a reasonably hot, cold year for mainstream gaming, I think.
Now, we can't possibly go any further on the review show without naming and possibly shaming our guests on the predictions they made last year. So, Charles, let's start with you. You said Sun Microsystems will go down. Can we have one sentence on how successful you found your prediction?
Well, they've had to lay tons of people off. They're being bought by Oracle, so I would say correct.
Good start. Bobby, one for you. Yahoo will cease to exist, at least as we know it.
I think we'll go for about a 50% hit on that one. I mean, they're in the process of selling off or giving away their search business to Microsoft. Carol Bartz has stood around and said, you know, we are not a search company. I think what we're seeing now is Yahoo shifting to become something new. So, yeah,
Not bad. Robert, if I can get you to judge Alex, since she's not here. Old school games developers at big games companies will go back to roots to create original games.
Well, I think new platforms like iPhone App Store and WiiWare have encouraged a lot of developers to make something very creative on those platforms. But I think that the big developers like EA still hold an awful lot of power.
Fair enough. Now, Charles, you thought the platform splits would mean it wouldn't be the year of the mobile game, but the iPhone and the iPod Touch would make it interesting.
Well, yeah, the iPhone iPod Touch has become sort of the fourth console, although the Nintendo DS is actually the best-selling console ever. It's just won that title. So the mobile game, in terms of games on mobile phones, that I think still hasn't quite coalesced. So, you know, but the iPhone and iPod Touch certainly did make it interesting. I'd have to say, I think that's another fairly
correct one. You get another tick?
Yeah.
Bobby.
It's nicest. I like marking myself.
More devices will start to incorporate Wi-Fi.
Yes.
Bobby Johnson.
Correct.
This is brilliant. There's lots of ticks going on here. iPhone will push into enterprise and operators will want it and will at least want copies of the iPhone, Charles.
Well, there are loads of iPhone-style things. There's all the LGs and the HTC-style things which have touch interfaces and which are trying to be very iPhone-y in all sorts of senses. So, you know, I think that that's certainly true. And as far as enterprise goes, well, everyone seems to have an iPhone. I feel like the only person on the planet who doesn't have one.
Vodafone is actually advertising the iPhone as a business device at this point.
Mm. So still more ticks.
Yeah.
Here's a great statement from you, Bobby. Entire robotic limb attached to a human being.
Yeah, right. This was my blue sky one. No, but you know, you can actually 3D print bones now, which is quite astonishing. So, you know, I'm pointing in the right direction.
All right, we'll give you that one then. Charles, people will see a doubling of their broadband speeds.
No, this is wrong. Hasn't happened. You know, some people got faster broadband from companies such as Virgin, but BT was meant to be rolling out its ADSL 2 Plus scheme to loads of exchanges, but it's really not happened as fast as might have been hoped, I think, because BT's got a big hole in its pension and because it's been squeezed on profits. So it hasn't been doing that, I think, as fast as we were expecting.
And to finish off, Bobby, you said, I hope we see a moonshot by Obama on green tech, alternative energy for the whole of the US by 2020.
Big fat wrong there. But, you know, I said I hope. But, you know, the economy's been so sucky, really, that nobody's dared to tread that far.
There was the moonshot where, you know, we tried to blow the moon up. Does that count?
Yeah, that went
war on the moonies.
That's the ultimate moonshot, I think. Yeah. But still, there's a lot of ticks there. I'd like to congratulate you. I think you all did very well. Robert, you and I smoothly sidestep any scrutiny by virtue of not making any predictions, mm-hmm. at least publicly, last mm-hmm. year. So let's return to 2009 and what actually happened. It was a year that the government got very much involved in what we were up to online, as well as the year they started to embrace the potential for communicating with us, the voting public.
Politicians do have to think about what we say. And I think the trouble with Twitter, the instantness of it, is I think there's too many twits might make a twat.
What we will be putting before Parliament is a proportionate measure that will give people ample awareness and opportunity to stop breaking the rules. If necessary, we have also made it clear that we will go further and make technical measures available, including account suspension. But it must become clear that the days of consequence-free, widespread online infringement are over.
There we go. Never a twattier word was spoken, I don't think. Robert, what was the message from the government? Do they want us online? Do they want us offline? What have they said this year?
This thing about three strikes, you have to understand that the place Mandelson is coming at this from is one of economic protectionism, arguing that creative industries contribute so many million pounds and so many jobs to the UK economy. At a time of recession, I think that's understandable. But how they execute that, how they find out who's sharing files and how to get rid of them is a whole different ballgame. And it's not necessarily going to be easy, and neither is getting this through Parliament.
It's kind of the chickens coming home to roost for digital technologies, in as much as it's really easy to copy stuff, but it's also really easy to track things online. And so there's the two sides that are warring here are finally coming to blows properly. And I also think we have to watch out, because three strikes is being bandied around in parliaments across the world as a potential solution to illegal file sharing. And yet nobody's actually passed it, and everyone refers to everybody else's legislation. So you see a government in New Zealand or France referring to Britain and saying, oh, they've made it work. Nobody's made it work. It's not proved anything. Nobody's actually succeeded in doing anything with this. And we have to be very sceptical that it's gonna pan out the way everyone expects.
A bit closer to home here, Charles, you've been very involved in the Free Our Data campaign. Could you tell us about how that's moved on this year?
At the beginning of the year, we were seeing a lot of movement, because there were a number of ministers in the Gordon Brown government who were pushing the idea. I mean, key among them was Tom Watson in the Cabinet Office, but there's also Jim Knight, who was in Education, and Michael Wills in Justice. It looked as though that was all going to fall by the wayside when Tom Watson resigned from the Cabinet Office. In that huge period in the summer when it looked as though Gordon Brown's grip on office was looking rather shaky. However, what's actually occurred is that Brown picked himself up, shook himself off, and has now instituted a thing called Smarter Government with the help of Liam Byrne, who's the Chief Secretary to the Treasury. The idea there is one of making public data, data collected at public expense, and data which is collected by government agencies, available to people for free. Very much instituted or pushed through, I think, and encouraged by Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the web, who was hired by Brown in the summer to try to push this. But as one of the people I was speaking to within the sort of the civil service has said, this whole idea about free data, free public data, has moved from being what he called a minority sport, you know, that was just sort of talked about by a few people in government, to being now the first thing that people actually think about when they come across a public data set, and when they're thinking about developing a public data set. They think, okay, so how can we make this available? How can we put it out there? You know, is there a way to do this for free? They don't think about charging for it. So the announcement by Gordon Brown and Tim Berners-Lee that they're going to make a subset of Ordnance Survey data, that is maps, available for free without copyright restrictions from April is a huge step forward. And it's basically what we've been pushing for in the Free Our Data campaign. We understand that there's also going to be some postcode data made free. So basically, Free Our Data won.
Good news there then.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's another tick.
They're coming thick and fast. Now, Robert, what about, now Whitehall has got on Twitter, is there anyone that you could pick out that's doing it particularly well or even particularly badly?
The aforementioned Tom Watson is probably one of the few. Downing Street got on Twitter, and Sarah Brown too. I don't know. I think we're hearing a lot of the same messages about Twitter and political engagement that we did when blogs first took off. To what extent can they really be used for civic engagement?
There was a wonderful story in the Telegraph, I have to say, which sort of calculated how much money was being spent by the government on Twitter, and it was something in the sort of tens of thousands, which one had to think wasn't actually that much for the sort of returns they were getting, because of, you know, number 10 Downing Street has a huge following. There's also the director of digital engagement is on there, and there's actually lots and lots of people who are, you know, quite deeply involved in, you know, public data, who are also involved, who use Twitter to, you know, as a sort of open forum to get things out there. So it's, I think it's actually very effective, far more effective probably than the petition side even, or just sort of government department blogs.
But I think a lot of MPs are realising, perhaps quite rightly, that Twitter represents only a small proportion of their constituents. So how much is it really worth the effort?
It's the important ones, isn't it, though?
So our message is, MPs, get online, tell us what's going on then. It's been a year of controversy in the gaming world, as well as a bit of a magical mystery tour for the Rock Band franchise.
People look and wonder how it came to this.
He's got a contact in Rio.
Don't you have a guy on the inside?
He's gone silent. Makarov's reach is spreading. This can only end one way.
You may be able to destroy me, but the beast will eventually come for you.
So how could I end with another? Oh, and I saw her stand there.
I don't know who started this conspiracy, but I know who will end it. My name is Ezio Auditore da Firenze. Like my father before me, I am an assassin.
Well, if anyone ever questioned the blockbuster nature of gaming nowadays, I think that clip proves there are some pretty high production values in the gaming world. Now, I'm no expert in gaming, so perhaps, Bobby, could you start by telling us about what's been your gaming highlight?
Yeah, it's been an interesting year, hasn't it? There's been a lot happening in the games industry, but overall, I think by the time we've got to the end of 2009, the results have been mixed. All of the companies, as everyone is during the recession, are kind of really struggling, looking at their bottom line and wondering how they can make money. EA is among the companies that have cut back seriously and reduced their output and slashed staff. The big title that launched this year was Modern Warfare 2, the latest game in the Call of Duty franchise. And in fact, that launch has been seen as so big by all the other publishers that they've actually shifted their release dates until after Christmas so that they can not go up head-to-head with Modern Warfare, which is an astonishing move, really, and something we haven't seen in the games industry before. I think that's one of the big stories. There's a whole bunch of other things as well going on. But there's really this feeling that the games industry now, it is really one of the biggest creative industries in the world in terms of revenues, and it's really starting to have an impact on the mainstream.
Actually, speaking of the industry as a whole, the government and everyone's been quite concerned there's some kind of brain drain.
The pre-budget report from Alistair Darling indicated that there wouldn't be special tax breaks for games companies, which they had been lobbying for very, very hard. TIGA had been trying to get sort of tax breaks equivalent to those in that they have in Canada and so on. Didn't get it, which they're very upset about, because they say that people are going to go off and set up publishers and game shops in other countries and just sell the stuff over here. Which would be a net loss to the UK. And I think there's a certain government not quite getting it because of a generational gap. You know, a lot of the people in government, never been gamers, never understood it. And even when they're presented with the arguments of, you know, this is how much money it makes, this is how many people it employs, they still don't get it compared to music, which is something they've always heard, they've always understood. And I think there is that sort of basic, subtle prejudice in there, which the ministers involved aren't aware of, which means that they're not giving the tax breaks that actually they should, where they do give it to music or film.
Okay, well, Robert, in terms of what's now offered in 2009, Xbox Live, for instance, is now offering Facebook and Twitter and access to things like that. Are consoles kind of changing from just merely a games machine, would you say?
Yeah, the console makers have wanted to become the home media entertainment hub for a number of years now, and it hasn't really happened, perhaps until this year. The implementations of Twitter and Facebook on Xbox Live are actually pretty good, but damn difficult to make your status updates without the keyboard attachment for the joypad. Another thing you saw this year, there was the addition of Sky TV and Last.fm to Xbox. Again, very good implementations and actually being advertised quite heavily on TV at this point. So I think this year and particularly next year, you're going to see the addition of a lot more TV video on demand to the consoles, and we'll probably see that next year before we actually get to see these fancy Project Canvas boxes.
But the interesting question is, I mean, you've got the iPlayer on the Wii. Why is iPlayer not available on the Xbox?
If off the top of my head, I think it's a digital rights management issue, isn't it? It's
it doesn't have enough digital rights management.
No, that the Xbox isn't able to cope with the streams that are pumped out by the BBC at the moment. I think it's interesting. You know, you look at the state of play in 2009. And the sands are really starting to shift again. We're in between generations in terms of consoles. You know, there are no big hardware launches. But out at E3 earlier this year, you really felt it, I think, when Sony and Microsoft, showed off their forthcoming maybe vaporware motion sensitive controllers. But at least they're trying to progress and take on the Wii. Nintendo, however, their big revelation was a little gizmo you plug on to the end of your finger, and I think there's a sense that Nintendo kind of all of the momentum they built up is starting to seep away, and Xbox and PS3 have kind of started to push through and show their capability as multimedia machines as well.
I'm only confused that Nintendo hasn't sought to make more of the WiiWare section, which they launched a couple of years ago. When you look at the success of something like iPhone's App Store, there was a ready opportunity there for Nintendo to do that, but you go there and there are no third-party apps whatsoever.
So they're missing a trick.
Apart from iPlayer, which launched this year.
Yeah. Well, when they do put all this media onto games consoles, that is when I will become a gamer. time now to hear from another friendly voice on a 2009 highlight.
Hi, I'm Greg from the Games Blog. For 2009, I think one of my main highlights really was the PlayStation 3 coming of age. Obviously with the games like Uncharted 2, but also with the pricing, the form factor, the new slim version. Yeah, it really feels now that PlayStation 3 is ready and ready for the battle ahead. One of my other highlights as well was 1 vs 100 on Xbox Live, which is an online kind of quiz game where you play against your friends and hundreds of other people. I really think that is a little pointer to the future of where online gaming is going.
Hi, this is Jack Schofield. I'm computer editor of The Guardian. The big thing for me last year was the arrival of cheap ultra portables. I've been carrying a computer around for about 25 years, which is a scary thought. And over the past 10 years, I've used mainly X series ThinkPads that typically cost £1,500 to £2,000 and gave you 3 to 4 hours of real world battery life. Or with Intel's new CULV chips and Windows 7, you get a much better system for about a third of the price, you know, £500 to £600. Last one I tried was an ASUS UL30A ultra portable running Windows 7, and I got more than 12 hours, which is twice as long as some people's smartphones. So if you're a mobile worker, it can change your life.
It's been an interesting economic time this year, with lots of big companies being hit hard by the recession. Having said that, there's several big names that have maintained profit, if not actually grown. Charles, who's come out of this year looking relatively golden?
Well, Apple has had a record year with enormous profits. The success of the iPhone just goes on, and its computers have done pretty well as well. HP, has to be said, has done very well as well. It's doing well on the hardware side. It's doing well on the services side. Google, of course, continues to grow. You know, through the advertising, it's just sucking in more of the advertising spend. Microsoft, it should be said, did have a poor quarter in the middle of the year, had a poor couple of quarters, but Windows 7 seems to be bringing it back very gradually, though there are still long-term questions over what it's going to do. And Oracle, of course, which is buying Sun Microsystems, which has been purchasing people all through the year, it's just a sort of a virtually unnoticed in the consumer side, but you know, in the business side, Oracle is just a shark which goes around eating up little companies.
Which we will be looking at in detail in next week's show when we preview 2010, I believe. Bobby, who's been notable for you for not doing as well as they might have hoped this year?
A lot of the difficulty has come in hardware businesses, or people who have suddenly taken hits on a lot of different fronts. So if you look at Sony, Howard Stringer, who's been running operations there, he's under real pressure at the moment to kind of push ahead with Sony and get them somewhere positive. Dell has taken a battering. In fact, I think it was Charles who pointed out that Apple now has so much cash in the bank that it could buy Dell outright tomorrow if it wanted. You know, that's how far Dell's plummeted. I think, you know, the fact of the matter is that anyone whose business is being undermined by the recession is struggling. Only the people who have kind of got clever, smart, long-term plays seem to have come out of it looking good.
It's intriguing how Nokia and Sony Ericsson have both recorded losses, both these you know, big mobile companies, but without a sort of standout phone, have both had a bad time.
Well, Nokia is a brilliant example. They've by far and away the biggest mobile manufacturer, and mobile is one of the biggest industries out there and grows so fast. But they've sold everything at low cost to markets who now don't want to spend money. And then you see BlackBerry and Apple come in and sweep up and take the winnings.
Robert, what would you attribute Nokia and Sony Ericsson's losses to?
Well, Nokia still has the biggest market share of the handset makers, but Nokia stands accused of failing to innovate, really. It's still using the Symbian operating system. It tried to shoehorn a touchscreen version of that into flagship handsets like the 5800 and N97 this year. It didn't really work. Symbian seems at this point quite ill-suited to running a modern smartphone in a way that's easy to use. And they're looking quite far behind, certainly iPhone, but also Android at this point. They need to bring Symbian up by the bootstraps, I think.
Now, 2009, as well as being a big year for business, has also marked the end of the Thursday tech section. Charles, where can people look to for their tech updates from now on?
Well, there will be games reviews in G2, which is the sort of the features section of the print section. The printed paper. There will also be various reviews of sorts in the guide on Saturdays. There will also be reviews in technology in the Observer review. And we're going to be aiming to get more technology stories one sort or another into the main part of the paper. So, you know, it's not as if we're vanishing. And, of course, you can also find all that we're doing online and through the Guardian iPhone app, where, if you like, you can make technology the top of your home screen. So you can always get your fix there, and the podcasts come included there as well.
So go and bookmark guardian.co.uk/technology
or buy the iPhone app.
They good plug. Now this year, in the world of both hardware and software, the big players pulled no punches. It was dirty ad campaigns and thunder stealing all round.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC. Hey, Mac, did you hear the good news?
Windows 7 is out, and it's not going to have any of the problems my last operating system had.
I feel like I've heard this before, PC.
What? Windows Vista's here, and it's not going to have any of the problems that Windows XP had. It's not going to have any of the problems that Windows ME had.
I said, make my PC simpler. So I told Microsoft, and before you know it, Windows 7 and this snap feature, just like I said. I think I'm a genius. I'm going to walk away with my genius now. I'm a PC. Windows 7 was my idea.
Don't you just want to knock Mr. PC and Mr. Mac's head together? Lots going on in hardware and software. Charles, we saw the launch of Windows 7 and Snow Leopard. Who won, would you say?
Oh, Snow Leopard is only a sort of incremental update to Leopard, which came out a couple of years ago. Whereas Windows 7, compared to Vista, is a very great deal easier to use. And compared to XP, which a lot of people stuck with rather than move up to Vista, it's a very big improvement. I mean, there was a lovely tweet from someone whose name I forget. I'm sorry. I'm sure they'll contact us, saying, OK, so I get the point of the Microsoft you know, ad campaign saying, yeah, Windows 7 was my idea. Where's the one saying, yeah, Windows Vista, that was my idea? You know, in terms of who won out, well, you know, Snow Leopard is good. Windows 7, compared to what came to it, is much better, and it's certainly done a lot more for Microsoft's bottom line.
Robert, have you had a chance to play on Windows 7 or Snow Leopard?
There's a copy of Windows 7 at home waiting for me to install on my girlfriend's laptop. Hopefully it's going to make a big difference. But I'm probably not alone in thinking that the PC and the Mac advert is probably more likeable at this point than the Mac guy. Plus, I think the Windows 7 campaign has been just inspired.
Oh, you're a fan?
I'm a fan of the campaign.
Ah, interesting. Bobby, we've seen a rise in netbooks and laptops and possibly fewer desktops. Are the desktops dead?
I think desktop computers are now an end of the market that is really there for people who do things professionally, or, you know, it's a kind of higher end. Although the price of desktop machines continues to plummet, so most, you know, a lot of people will have one. But laptops and netbooks are really where the game's at. I think this is not a great thing for the computer industry, because netbooks are, the profit margins are so low on netbooks that you can really struggle to make a lot of money through them. But I think, you know, what we're seeing is people value convenience in a way that we haven't seen before. I think, you know, when you take that in combination with a mobile phone, people really want to carry that computing power around with them in a way that, you know, 5-10 years ago you would never have considered doing the stuff you do today on the move.
We've seen the launch also of a couple of new iPods. Charles, what's the future hold for iPods, would you say?
Well, the standalone iPod, or you know, generic digital music player, the ones that don't have connectivity, I think, have a very limited life. It was interesting that Apple chose to sort of speed bump the iPod Nano, which is one of its smaller versions, by adding a camera and a video camera to it, but didn't do the same for the iPod Touch. The rumours are that they couldn't fit the camera and the circuitry into the iPod Touch, but it sort of seemed like a way to make the iPod Nano sort of justify itself, to give it a feature that is there in the iPhone, isn't there in the iPod Touch. iPods, or digital music players that do have connectivity, that have Wi-Fi and that sort of connectivity, those, it seems to me, do have a potential. And one of the suggestions is that the device manufacturer that comes up with a sort of an iPod Touch using the Android system will do rather well, because they could really tune in to all the people who want to buy apps or want to use apps but don't want to buy a Google Android phone.
Yeah, there was something like that demonstrated at CES last year, but nothing seems to have come of it so far. Robert, Chrome OS was previewed this year. We'll talk about it a little bit more in the preview programme about 2010, but what are your initial thoughts on it?
I think Chrome's very exciting. It's nice to see some innovation happen in the OS space that's not Mac versus PC. I am one of those people for whom 2009 was cloudy, I think was Charles's word. Don't expect me to go firing up Microsoft Word just to write a little document. I'm a Google Docs guy at this point. But I'm not sure that's the case for most people. And I don't think most people have mobile broadband, which they could use to fire up Google Docs on the go. Chrome OS is going to take a small portion of the market and is going to help netbook manufacturers undercut each other because it's going to be pretty cheap for OEMs to get. But I think it's going to remain a small percentage in 2010.
So there you have it, the stuff we thought made 2009 the decade ending year that it was. Next week, we'll be making some rash predictions as to what 2010 holds, solely so that in a year's time, all those involved can be dragged over the coals on their lack of psychic ability. I'd like to thank Bobby, Charles and Robert. This has been The Guardian Tech Weekly. I'm Susie Weezer.